with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hello, friends, and good morning. Or I guess it's the afternoon for those of you out there on the East Coast as we welcome you into this Masters Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And it's just one of those days, Michael, that you can't help but smile. I know we got delayed a couple hours, but all of the stars are shining out there at Augusta National today.
It really is. And the Hello Friends will be working, the great Jim Nance in the 18th tower, such a great voice to go along with this great tournament. And we all know the course. We all know, you know, where the danger is. And it's just really enjoyable. And I think the way that they evoke history into this tournament creates a sense of belonging for us that even don't play golf, right? It allows you to want to see the tapestry that goes into the game and walk around the course, and people are dying to get the tickets to get on the course. They don't let you bring phones on. It's just really, to me, one of the best run tournaments. No commercials except for the last 3 minutes. You just enjoy it and take it all in. And it's truly the beginning of spring when we're in front of our TV watching the Masters.
I also love that the fans in attendance, you can't run. So you see all of the power walking, trying to go from green to green and hole to hole. It's so much fun. And
it's so good. And Vern Lindquist is last year. Oh. We got Vern last year on the 16th tower. You know, who can forget in 86 when he said, oh, my. I mean, such a great voice. And, you know, the great Pat Summerall used to be in the 18th. And, you know, I've been so blessed in my life to be around Nance and all the golf people when I was in the National Football League. And they would tell some incredible stories about Summerall and about when Fred Couples won the Masters. It's just reeks of incredible tradition, something that makes us want to watch it every single year, regardless of who's in it. This is a tournament that doesn't need Tiger to be great. Yeah.
And I think, too, Michael, for the casual sports fan, if there's one event that you're going to watch on tour throughout the course of the year, every single year, it's the Masters at Augusta National. And with that, as every day here in the off season, we do a little edition of what's on Michael's mind, what's going through your head on a regular basis. Yours today has to do with an event at the Masters that took place yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is what makes the Masters so good. They have the par three. They put their kids out there and they put them in the uniform of the caddies, which is incredible, right? And then you see Bubba Watson's daughter just knocking it out of the park in terms of putting. I mean,
amazing.
This is incredible. He gives her a little tip. She taps it. I mean, how adorable is this, right? I mean, this is like when you put dogs in commercial. You just love it, right? See this pretty little girl, this cute little girl in her uniform. Now she comes back. Look at this putting stroke she has, Stormy. Is it incredible?
Unbelievable.
Like, this is why you love the Masters. I mean, there's no way that's going in. There's no way that's going in. It's going to fall off. And there it goes, right? I mean, you got to love it. You just love it. These are memories that will never go away. Oh, we have a third one, Stormy.
Yep.
Can you imagine she played the par threes and she got three of these?
She was nailed.
I love that. That was higher than Mickelson's leap when he won.
I was going to say,
and Bubba's.
Go ahead, Michael.
No, and Bubba's recording it on his phone. He got his phone on the course. I'm surprised he was allowed to do that.
For the par three, they'll allow it. But I was just going to say, she's going to make him look bad if he starts missing putts out there throughout the course of the weekend. But that was awesome. I love, too, how he was mic'd up for it. And you hear him say, just give it a little nudge. And she goes, okay. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good idea. And just sinks it.
Well,
awesome.
You know, the notorious thing about Bubba is he yells at his caddy all the time. Thank God he didn't yell at his daughter out there. I mean, you know, that's the best part, right?
Such an awesome moment. And yeah, it is adorable being dressed up like the caddy, having Watson on her back. So cute. And that's just one of the many things that we love about this weekend. A very, very special tournament. So special, in fact, Michael, that as we turn the page to football, we've decided to do a Masters theme for some of these questions I want to tee you up on. We talk about the quarterbacks that are set to be drafted in round one, 2 weeks from today. We're going to start with the topic of reading the greens here, Michael. Who among the quarterbacks to be drafted this year would you say is the best in-game analyst, somebody who diagnoses the play, makes the right reads?
I would say Caleb Williams. I mean, that's the one thing that separates him from the other five. His ability to anticipate and process is very good. You know, he understands where he wants to go with the football. He has a really good feel for it. And when he doesn't play outside of himself, he can be really effective. There are times where he gets small in the pocket, but he has a great eye hand read on the greens here, Stormy. And I think that's what separates him. That ability to anticipate that in cut coming open out on his fifth step and throwing it and trusting that it's going to be open. Those are hard things for young quarterbacks to do, but he can.
Let's go next to the longest drive. Which of these quarterbacks, in your opinion, has the most live arm?
Yeah, I think this is easy. Michael Penix does. Michael Penix has got a gun, and Michael Penix can control the football on the third level, which is the down the field throws, the over routes, right? The nine routes, those three, the post, the deeper post. He's got really, really good deep ball accuracy. And that's huge, right? That's like having a three-run homer in the four spot of your baseball lineup, right? Because they can get the ball out of the park. And what you don't want is somebody that can't do that. And we've seen on all these quarterbacks that have not played to the level we want them to play to, is their inability to get it down the field, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, whether it's Daniel Jones, whether it's Kyler Murray, they all don't do that. You know, one of the things Tua doesn't throw it up the field, but he throws it in five steps and the receivers run with it afterwards and he gets it out there to him. So that's why his yards per attempt is up. It's not about the arm. It's about, is your accuracy on the third level very good? And I think Penix can do that. And I think that's why Penix appeals to a lot of teams. And if you have the perfect plan for him, I think it would really work out.
Yeah, it's that ball placement too, right? Not only being accurate to getting your guy the ball, but throwing away from the defenders as well. Michael Penix Jr., awesome in that area. The Raiders are the favorite on the odds board to land Michael Penix Jr., plus 260, followed by the Vikings at plus 350. Let's go to the short game. Which quarterback do you trust most on third down in this draft?
Well, that, you know, the guy that's proven this to be right is J.J. McCarthy, yep. And that's why he's so far up the board. You know, he's a really good third down player. He's a good big game player. You know, I think he certainly understands how to play within the framework of the offense. Look, how many quarterbacks would have been just going crazy not throwing the ball in the second half of a game? You know, like be looking at the sidelines. And I think there's some times where Moore, the head coach, when he was calling the plays, kind of became a little bit of an offensive line coach and started to call more runs than he should have. And McCarthy didn't complain, which is really important. It's really important that you have that kind of selflessness on your team, which Michigan clearly did. I think that's the one thing about all these three national champions in college. They all were selfless. Connecticut, South Carolina, and the University of Michigan.
McCarthy, 4-1 to go number 2 overall. He is plus 320 to go number 3, plus 175 second shot on the board behind Marvin Harrison Jr. to go 4, and in that 5 spot, which the Chargers currently occupy, but if they traded out for a quarterback, plus 275 third on the odds board there to go 5. Who's in the sand, Michael? Which player is most likely to cause their new head coach headaches?
Well, I think Drake May's all over the place. You know, he sprays it like anybody can, you know, and so it's the perfect, he's the perfect fit here. You know, that doesn't mean he's not going to play a great round, and that doesn't mean he's not going to get up and down, but there's some times where he sprays the ball, as Christopher Sims was talking about yesterday. So for me, I think he is. But look, one of the things is, we know this, Led Zeppelin had a great line, is, you know, words have two meanings. Well, potential has two meanings. And I think ultimately, potential can be good and it can be a deterrent. And what we see with Drake May is great potential. But now, what meaning does that going to have? Only he's going to be able to. But what gets Drake May kind of a bump to a lot of these teams is his personality, his character, his willingness to be coached. And that's an easy thing for me to say. But if you talk to any college coach, you talk to any pro coach, what we're getting to is a generation of some that don't want to be coached. They think they have all the answers. Why does Danny Hurley tell the parents that we're not recruiting your kid if you're going to think that everything that goes wrong is the coach's fault? No. Because he wants to coach. Why is Jay Wright doing TV and not coaching? Because he couldn't coach.
Drake May, competitive is all get out as well. And we all know the story of him being the youngest of that group of brothers who win just about everything. Luke May wins a national championship with the Tar Heels basketball program. He's got another brother that won a national championship in baseball. they are winners, and they, boy, did they treat him bad when he was a little kid trying to play with the big boys when they're all 6'4" at the time and he was the littlest one. And yeah, we all know the sand. When you're hitting out of the sand, Michael, it can either be a beautiful stroke or it can cause you some problems. So we'll see what that ends up being for Drake May. What about a hole in one, Michael? Which team needs an ace, needs to nail their draft picks?
Well, any team that picks a quarterback needs to. They all fit. But I would say more than any team, Washington. It's the first year. It's the rebuild that needs to happen. We need the Washington football team, whatever we call them, the Commodores, the Commanders, the Nationals, the whatever, right? We need great football. The NFL is better when football is great in Washington, D.C. And I'm not sure all the tarnish is off. I still think there's some issues here that Josh Harris hasn't cleaned up. I don't see the enthusiasm that you would see. I mean, think about it. You know, what you wanted to happen for Washington was what happened in Fayetteville yesterday when John Calipari showed up and there was a stadium filled with people. I don't get that sense. Now, winning takes time, and we'll give them that time, but they're going to have to get this right. And it starts right now. There's no better place to do it.
Awesome stuff. I love connecting what is an amazing weekend with the Masters with what we do here in the NFL Talk and Draft, which will be upon us from Detroit before we know it. We're going to hit the break here real quickly. Speaking of John Calipari, the opening at Kentucky, the options for who that next head coach will be is getting slimmer and slimmer. We'll discuss that and a whole lot more in terms of the news of the day in No Way or No Doubt. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Remember, here at VSiN, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. But take advantage. This offer is for a limited time. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits.
No doubt.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
Certainly is. It's time for No Way or No Doubt here on the Lombardi Line, starting in college hoops, because the list of candidates for Kentucky's next head coach is dwindling, and that is not by the choice of the university. Today we saw Scott Drew say he's staying at Baylor. Nate Oates says no. Jay Wright coming out of retirement, no. Billy Donovan said his total focus is on the Bulls, and Danny Hurley is focused on a three-peat, Michael. So no way or no doubt, Kentucky should reach out to Rick Pitino about a return to Lexington. What say you?
No way. I mean, I think they already know what Pitino's answer is, so it doesn't make any sense to reach out. I think who they should reach out to is Buzz Williams. You know, Buzz is exactly kind of what they want in their program. He's comes from a, you know, he recruits well. He's got a chance, you know, he's made the tournament. He's been able to play in the Southeast Conference, handle a lot of different situations, one at Marquette, one at West Virginia, one at Virginia Tech. I mean, the track record is really impressive. I don't know why he's not a leading candidate. In fact, I just saw on Twitter on the break about how Dick Weiss, the great basketball writer, used to be at the Philadelphia Daily News, great college basketball writer for a long time. He said, why isn't anybody talking about Buzz Williams going to Kentucky? I think it would make a lot of sense. I really do.
Very interesting. And for a second there, I thought that we just weren't interesting, that our music died out, but we got it back. Let's keep it rolling here and go to the NFL. As part of the deal to acquire Stephon Diggs, the Texans essentially tore up the final 3 years of his contract, giving him the ability to leave and become a free agent after this season. He also got a raise for next year. The Texans took the $3.5 million guaranteed to Diggs next season, moved it up to this year, assuring him $22.5 million guaranteed in 2024. No way or no doubt, though, Michael, that Stephon Diggs will decide to remain a Texan, and they'll have him as well for more than one season.
No way. He's going to the highest bidder. I mean, look, you know, he's wanted out of Minnesota. He's wanted out of Buffalo. He got his money. This is a pay for play year, and for Houston, you can't be in a better situation, because if he plays well, great. If he doesn't play well, oh my, right? You know, you don't have any trailing money to him. So I think this is a great, great opportunity for Houston to get the best, whatever is left in Stephon Diggs' year, right? I mean, we saw his numbers go significantly down, 2 yards per catch. You know, he had some critical drops that we're not used to seeing. But this team's a little different in Houston. He's not going to be the guy that you walk to the stadium or the coordinators say, we got to take him out of the game. No. Houston's got Nico Collins. They got Tank Dell. And then you'll take your chances with Diggs, which will really help Diggs out a lot.
Yeah, and to your point, he's certainly incentivized to have a good season. So we'll see what that results in beyond this year. Not his former quarterback, Josh Allen, but defensive tackle Josh Allen for the Jags signed a new contract with the team yesterday. He's only the third first-round pick with the Jags to sign an extension since 2008. Another contract looming, of course, is their quarterback in Trevor Lawrence, who is entering the final season of his rookie deal. The team has to make a decision on his fifth-year option in the coming weeks. No way or no doubt, Trevor Lawrence will sign an extension with the Jags this offseason.
No doubt he will. There you go. There's our first no doubt.
We got one.
Yeah, he will. We got one. There it is. Elliot, good job. Yeah, they're in the process of negotiating. There's no question. I think a lot of this is in the timing, whether it's Tua goes first, whether Lawrence. But these are going to be really significant contracts. And I think at the end of the day, both quarterbacks are going to be there.
We're always talking about quarterbacks as it pertains to the draft, and the Vikings put together some draft capital with the anticipation of trading up from that number 11 spot. No way or no doubt, Michael, the Vikings should stay put at number 11 in the NFL draft. Would that make sense?
Well, based on the storm front we had and the warnings that you issued to everybody today here on the show, I think there's no question they should stay put, right? Why not? I mean, they should heed your advice perfectly, because it has shown through history. Look, it's pretty clear that history is a great indicator. If you don't understand past performance will predict future achievement, then this is the wrong business. We know that the quarterback position is hard to evaluate correctly. But we also know, even correctly evaluated, there's a chance for a lot of errors. And I think, to me, giving away assets to get up for the guy, you know, and I would have been at fault to do this too. You know, you'd think, oh, I got to go up to get the guy. But you don't really have to if you're smart about it, because the alternative is you could have blown the pick, right?
No doubt that they should stay put. No way that they will, based on what we know about the NFL and teams at this point. Let's stick with the theme of quarterbacks here, though. Kirk Cousins says he wants Atlanta, Michael, to be his final destination. Here's the Falcons' new QB on the big podcast with Shaq.
I want this to be my final stop. You know, I don't want to do the deal. No offense, but I don't want to go play for the Suns and the Celtics at the end. I want to finish with the Heat, if you will, and be done, you know? So
same thing I said.
Yeah, so that's really my plan, is that I wouldn't play for another team. I'd finish with the Falcons. My boys are 6-5. They won't remember that I played in Washington. They will barely remember that I played in Minnesota. They're going to remember I played for the Falcons, and I want those to be good memories.
And, of course, you think about the family connection there in Atlanta as well with his wife. Kirk Cousins, Michael, no way or no doubt, will end his career with the Atlanta Falcons.
There's no doubt he will, because, like, only Kirk Cousins could be thinking about his next contract. I mean, the guy's amazing.
That's a great
the guy doesn't
point.
Pass the salt at the table. He doesn't do any. He doesn't share anything. He's already thinking about his next contract. He's like the coach who gets a job and starts texting his friends about the next job he's going to get. Like, come on, Kirk. How about winning there? How about giving something back to the city of Atlanta? How about the answer should have been, hey, you know, I'm only thinking about winning in Atlanta. I don't care what happens. I'm going to give my heart and soul to winning in Atlanta. Now, why would we say that? You know, I hope to finish my career. But if somebody comes and offers me 25 cents more, I'm off to the races.
He is the guaranteed money master. 4-year, $180 million.
I marvel at it. I say it with all due respect, Stormy. Mm-hmm. He leaves. He leaves nothing on the table. When his table's clear, when he's done, the table is, there's no leftovers.
Somebody that Kirk Cousins knows pretty well, Dalvin Cook. Cook told KPRC2's Aaron Wilson on Friday during a workout that he's got it all. The tools are still there. He said, I didn't really get no reps last year. The legs are fresh. The resume speaks for itself. I'm still Dalvin Cook. I'm still that guy. No way or no doubt, Michael, that Dalvin Cook is still that guy.
I think there's some doubt. This one is kind of in between. I was big on Dalvin Cook last year. The numbers said that there's a decline that's going to happen. But look, I think this, he could be the guy for the first half of the season. If he loses his legs, then you got some issues. But for me, I think that it's a little bit in doubt here. I don't think it's, a lot of it's going to come to the contract. How much am I going to have to risk in terms of finances to make this work? I think that's the fundamental question that you have to answer. And if you can get a good answer there, then go for it. But to me, if he's looking for a big contract, there's too much doubt in that for me to do that.
He had four straight years going over 1,100 yards on the ground before doing a whole lot of nada with the Jets last season. The other team in New York, the New York Football Giants tight end Darren Waller, Michael, no way or no doubt can still be effective if he decides not to retire and comes back for another year.
Well, I think Darren Waller, once you start thinking about retirement, Darren Waller's been thinking about retirement for 2 years now. I don't know why everybody's surprised. I mean, I went out and said it last year and got ripped for it because all the Giants fans got mad at me. Like seriously, you know, I think to me, this has been what's going on. He wants to be a musical entertainer. He wants to be a rapper. And good for him if he does it. Look, this guy's had a great career. You know, he came from Georgia Tech, not drafted, overcame an addiction problem, had some good seasons at the Raiders, made a lot of money. The Giants gave him a big raise. They gave up a third-round pick for him. And he's going to, you might as well just retire. I mean, like, he's going to get hurt again. He's not durable. And look, let's be clear. It's hard to say this, but there's no love. He loves being a rapper. He don't love playing football at this point in his career.
And his wife, obviously, Kelsey Plum of the Las Vegas Aces, is out here. If you want to be a rapper, Vegas, not a bad spot. He turns 32 in December, told Forbes recently he has yet to make his decision on his NFL future. Great edition, as always, of No Way or No Doubt when we come back. Final half hour of the program. VP of Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from here, Mike Palm will join us in studio, get the lay of the land on all things behind the counter, as well as Palm's pressing three to close out the day. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Michael and Stormy back here on the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, as the one and only VP of Operations, Mike Palm, joins us in studio for the final half hour, like he does every Thursday. And a Masters tournament going on today. It was a great weekend with the men's and women's basketball tournament wrapping up. How are we doing?
Good morning, Stormy. Michael, glad to have you back. We missed you. You're short time away, but we're so glad you're with us here today.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. It's always good to be back for the Masters. It was good to watch the Circa just booming with people watching the tournament. It was fun. And now we're on to the NFL draft, which we're excited for. Were you in San Diego with the team down there? I saw Derek brought everybody to the Padre game.
I did. I made the quick trip. They went down Monday. And they were on the field Monday night, and then they did an event with Marquee, because we were sponsoring the Cubs through Marquee on Tuesday night at a bar and grill down there. And then yesterday they went to the game, and we had that beach area. You know, we have the red umbrellas there in center, right center field. So I flew down. I left here about 11:30 and went to the game. Of course, it's perfect weather in San Diego, and it was a nice game if you're a Padre fan. I tell you, this 15-second pitch clock is really pushes this game. I know the union came out and said that that's a reason for all the pitcher injuries. They don't have time to recover their arm because they're just constantly pitching. But I didn't notice it as much watching it on TV. This is the first live game I've been to, and it is significant that they dropped it from 18 to 15.
Do you buy that from an injury standpoint?
I don't know. What will we know? The study, you know, they haven't done a study. They'll do a study. You know, the union contract comes up. They're going to be negotiating next year. So the league's going to say it doesn't. The players will say it does. It's just another one of the bargaining positions. But I'm telling you, the game had 12 runs, and it was exactly 2 hours and 30 minutes. And could have been 224 if they would have went up and down in the top of the ninth. Cease only gave up two hits. I was texting people in the top of the third, no hitter is live because it's an odd. It's the only 340 time start of the year for the Padres. Only one. So he got through the first three. The next three innings were shadow innings, right? So I thought he could get live. And then they had an error by Kim and then the home run by Bush. And that was it for the Cubs. Two runs, and they only had two hits the whole game. So, but still, with 12 runs in the game, 2 hours and 30 minutes is quite remarkable.
Yeah, Mike, how big is for you? I know it's a tough sport to bet, but we do a great job of covering it. Everybody here, the Long Shot Podcast, does a great job of covering the Masters. But of all the golf tournaments, which one seems to resonate with the bettors and people that will come to Circa to watch?
Well, it's the Masters is head and shoulders above the other three majors, with the U.S. Open being second. And it kind of falls good to the calendar this year. No Easter, right? A lot of times it falls on Easter. We're after the tournaments. So it kind of almost gets a standalone here as baseball is so much in its infancy of the season. And, we're doing the specials with all the Masters prices. All the food are Masters priced items. I mean, sandwiches are $1.50 or
$3. That's awesome.
Yeah, the Coors Light's $50. But anyhow, big crowds. We're going to have great weather this weekend. Keep your fingers crossed. Nice crowd in the book to start out today. The rain delay helps as far as our right because people are up. They're ready to go. It hasn't started yet, so you can still get those, full tournament bets in. And I was reading, on Twitter, most books have Tiger as their number one liability. Now, it'll change over the course of the next 4 days, but I'll give you guys each 10 guesses who our number one liability is here at Circa.
Don't say Scottie Scheffler.
He is not. He's a nice, nice result.
Who do you think, Michael?
Your number one liability here.
If this person, if
Brooks
this person,
Koepka?
No. I'll give you one hint. This will get it down for you. I've been said to look like this person. People have said that I resemble him, and I guess he's a few years older than me, maybe now. But
who do you look like?
Ooh.
I don't want to take any criticism when I give you this answer
okay,
either.
I'm ready though.
Fred Couples.
Oh, stop.
Get out.
I'm not the one saying
I love it.
I'm not the one saying it, but people have said that.
You just pass it along. Don't shoot the messenger, right, Mike?
Correct. Don't shoot the messenger. Fred Couples is our number one liability.
No way.
Yes.
That's remarkable.
Well, it doesn't take too many bets on him to make him.
That's a good
Tiger's
point.
Right up there, top three.
How long have you had these odds out?
This pool we bet into in, I believe they opened it up in October. So this is the longest run up too as well to this pool. But of course, you get all the Tiger action, make the cut, and all that. And he does a lot for the sport, obviously, and the attention still. He's the only comp I can think of with Caitlin Clark.
How are you holding up, by the way?
It's still surreal. The whole thing was surreal, I think, Stormy. And the whole experience is amazing. I mean, for the Iowa women and for the state of Iowa, for that to happen and them to be in the limelight and to get to a national championship game twice. I thought Gino and Paige Beckers were very classy in defeat on Friday. They didn't want to complain about the moving screen. I had UConn moneyline, as you know, from doing the show with me Friday, so I would have liked to have seen a shot at it, right? Win or lose on the end. And then I know Dawn Staley took a lot of criticism for her transgender comment, but I thought she got put in a really bad spot to answer that question. There's no right answer. But in that moment on the podium to acknowledge what she did for the women's game with so many other people, it's just amazing to me. And WNBA stars can't wait to throw a lot of shade at, she racked up stats against 18-year-olds. What do you think you did? You know what I mean? And the difference for her is that she's the only one who's been able to transform the sport to where more people watch the women's championship game than the men's. More people watch that game against UConn on ESPN than any other basketball game in the history of the network, including Game 7 of conference finals, including when ESPN used to have the men's tournament the early rounds years ago before CBS got the whole thing. It's remarkable. And the only other comp I can have is what Tiger did for golf. on his way up when he got to the top and to be number one. That's the only other comp I'm putting eyes on a sport that would have never been there.
How many kids do you think, Mike, young women all over this United States that watch this girl play and watch the women's tournament and said, that's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, the power of that is what's promoted rock and roll. I mean, Elvis Presley goes on the Ed Sullivan show, and the next thing you know, everybody wants to be the Beatles show up. And then the Beatles go on the Ed Sullivan show, and all of a sudden, you know, Springsteen and Billy Joel show up. And so it's like the power of the messaging without being a message is so great. And we won't ever be able to really understand it. You know, what's the most popular name for a lot of kids? Shaq. Because when Shaq was playing, everybody wanted to name their kid Shaq. I mean, there is a subliminal power to somebody who captures America's attention.
I think Caitlin Clark did more for women's athletics than Title IX could ever do. That's my opinion. Now, yes, you can argue, you know, but if you didn't have Title IX, you wouldn't have the minor women's sports because there wouldn't be funding that's required and all that. But what she will do, and to your point, Michael, girls that are 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 years old and a basketball in their backyard and think that they can change their lives and things like that, it's pretty special and it's pretty amazing. And I just hope that everyone embraces her. Diana Taurasi makes $220,000 a year because that's the salary cap in the WNBA. And why is that the salary cap? Because they don't sell tickets and drive TV ratings, right? Yeah. And they have to be backstopped by the NBA. It's funny because we're talking about it's $2,500 a ticket for courtside seats at Mandalay Bay in the fourth game of the year for the Aces, the Indiana Fever, to come here, Michael. And an hour later, or while we were on the air, they announced they're moving it to T-Mobile because they have the demand to sell 20,000 tickets. I was sold out every one of her home games. I did an interview Sunday morning with a gentleman who did a freelance piece that appeared in the Cedar Rapids Gazette on Monday morning, by the way. He's a graduate of Northwestern. He said the students there bought the season ticket packages just to go to the one game so they'd have good seats for the Iowa game. Because if you would have waited, you'd have paid 10 times for nosebleed seats when she came. And she can do this for this league.
Well, you talk about the Aces moving their game for the Fever. Again, she's not even been drafted number one overall yet. She just predicted to be drafted there to the Fever. The Fever, who you could count on one hand how many national TV games they had, won.
They had one.
They're going to have 36 of their 40 on nationally televised games next year. And you can say, well, why are we only talking about Caitlin Clark? There's all these other players. Those other players got a platform and got elevated like a rising tide lifts all boats. Okay. And she has done that because she is the difference maker. Like, she is getting all of this attention because of what she's done to elevate the sport. And we talk about this national championship game, the rating that they had. It was up 85% from last year, up 285% from the last South Carolina championship 2 years ago.
So, Army, we sat here on Friday and said we didn't think the UConn game would get as, you know, the $12 million for LSU on Monday. Yep. We said 10.
Maybe not.
Because there's not that, the, you know, Angel Reese versus Caitlin and maybe the race issue with UConn. And they get 14 and then 18 for the championship game. And I want to hear all these people saying, oh, but the men's was on TBS. Oh, but the men's was at 9:30. Stop it. If the women's game would have been on Tuesday night at 9:30, they would have had that many.
It was the game in the men's side that everybody wanted, two of the top seeds, and it was a clunker. Just admit it. It's fine.
I wonder when's the last time that the top two seeds in both the men's and the women's met in the same year. I don't know if it's ever happened.
No, it was awesome. And what you talked about with the WNBA players, Taurasi, Brianna Stewart, all of them, it's just jealousy.
Ridiculous.
That's all that it is. We'll be right back. Palms pressing three coming up next as we wrap things up on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up. Again, that's $500 in bonus bets for every $1,000 you wager. We are right back here on the Lombardi Line, live from Circa Resort and Casino, where if you're new here, it's time for Palms Pressing 3. Mike Palm asking our own Michael Lombardi 3 pressing big picture questions. And we've got a special open for it these days. Let's go.
Pressing. Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, Michael, here's number one. On Friday, September 6th, the NFL will go to South America for the first time. The Eagles and the Packers will meet in Sao Paulo, Brazil, the fourth largest metropolitan area in the country, in Corinthians Stadium. Offshore, the Eagles opened as a 3.5-point favorite. It's been bet down to 1.5. My question to you, Michael, is the wrong team favored in that game in Brazil?
You know, I keep asking the same thing, Mike, because Green Bay's had a good offseason. Green Bay brings back a lot of good young players, and Philly's going to be a work in progress. New defensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator. Now, Philly's improved, no question, with Saquon Barkley, the addition in the backfield, and there's still the draft ahead of Philly. But I think Green Bay's continuity offensively, the way Jordan Love played down the stretch, if you take that 49er game and advance it forward. So, yeah, I was surprised. I didn't know it opened 3 offshore. I knew it was 1.5 at DraftKings. I asked Mike Somich earlier in the show if he was surprised by that. I kind of feel like it's a pick'em game to me. I don't know the venue in terms of how you could gain a home field advantage, so take that out. Now, what I do know is that there's a lot of Green Bay fans down in South America, which I didn't know. And so, maybe they're going to be a loud crowd down there for going the Packers. But we do know the Packers will be better defensively. I do believe that. And I think offensively, they can be dynamic.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until I was reading the quotes from Mark Murphy after the announcement became public, where he said, I think we're either the first or second most popular team in Brazil. We're kind of the people's team. People like the idea of a community-owned team with our history and tradition. So maybe they do have a little bit of home field advantage in Brazil.
I find it interesting that they're playing in Corinthians Stadium, which did host World Cup matches, right?
In the Olympics in 2016.
But it's the fourth largest stadium in Sao Paulo. I mean, obviously soccer, they have these huge cathedrals, right? Because it's so popular. But like, if they expect it to draw, I mean, Tottenham and Wembley, they get 80, 90,000 people they can put in those stadiums in England. That just seems small to me, 47,000. But it's a first time event, and maybe the technology is further advanced and there's other advantages to the stadium. Okay, Michael, I got to get a draft question in here. I'm very happy. Chris Bennett here at Circa and Jeff Benson tweeted this. We're going to have a much deeper draft menu this year, Stormy. He wants to put up 50 different props on the draft.
Okay.
So, and I think it's going to be a fun year. So here's one I'm going to throw out. I asked them to put this prop up. I don't know if they're going to do it or not, but I'll ask Michael this question. Will there be more quarterbacks drafted or more wide receivers drafted in the first 10 picks?
Ooh.
Oh, I think there'll be more quarterbacks picked in the first 10 than wide receivers. Look, I do think we know there's going to be 2 in the first 10 for sure. We know Harrison and we know Neighbors, right? I think that's pretty much of a lock. Now, where else it fits remains to be seen. I think there's kind of a little bit of a conflict in terms of how everybody else has the receiver board. I know the mock drafters have it a certain way, and I don't think it's that same way with people in the league. But I think the quarterbacks, I think we can clearly say, which is interesting today. Now, Jaden Daniels, Mike, went and visited, is working out for Minnesota. They pick 11th. There had to be something told to Jaden Daniels' agent that would allow him to work out for a team outside the 10. You know, we have a little bit of a basketball mentality in this situation because, you know, if you're not in the lottery, guys won't work out for you. Well, in football, it's a little bit of the same. If Daniels felt like he was going to be picked in the top 5, he's got no interest in working out for Minnesota. But I'm sure Minnesota probably said to Daniels, look, we're contemplating moving up to get you. We think we can get there. And we think we have a chance to get you, but we really can't make that decision until we work you out. That's the conversation. And whether they decide to move up or not, that still remains to be seen. So we know there's him play. Penix has been in play. The thing about Penix that makes it hard is we don't know the medical on Penix, and the medical is different in every team. But we do know 4. McCarthy's a hot commodity. I said yesterday to Stormy that McCarthy could go. He's visiting Washington tomorrow. That he could go in at the second pick, and she's like, no way. Well, it sounds like no way, but I think all these quarterbacks are ranked differently by all the teams, with Caleb Williams being the only lock at number 1.
I would be so surprised if he went top five. I mean, and now we have this 1, 2, 3, 4 going to be quarterbacks, and Daniels is slipping. And does that lead you to think that Minnesota might be working a deal with New England, that he went there, that they're going to try to go to three? And here's the point of my question is, New England is so far away that even drafting a rookie quarterback, they're going to waste 3 years out of his rookie contract before they're going to be able to win anything.
Well, I don't think that. I mean, they were really good defensively last year. Their kicker was horrendous, and their quarterback turned the ball over like it was his job. I obviously, there's going to be an adjustment from Bill Belichick to Gerard Mayo. I know everything's peachy and rosy and everything's great up there, and Jonathan Kraft's running the team and everything's great. But, the you know, listening to the comments of Vince Wilfork, listening to the comments of Ty Law, all these players that have come out after the Dynasty documentary to let people know what a great coach Belichick is, no one talks about missing him. People more talk about what the, you know, what they don't have. And so I do think that's going to be an adjustment. I would agree with that. I think they were closer. If he would have stayed another year, got a quarterback, I think they would have been in the mix. But that's not for me to say.
Okay, final question. We learned this morning that O.J. Simpson had passed away here in Las Vegas. You know, we're 55 years removed from a Heisman, a national championship, and the number one pick in the draft. 51 years removed from the 2,000-yard season, and 30 years removed from Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman's murders in Los Angeles. What will be the legacy of O.J. Simpson, Michael?
Well, it will be the murders. And I think, you know, I can share a story with you. We played Buffalo on Monday night in 1995. I stood next to the great Jim Brown. And I walked over to Jim and I said, Jim, how you doing? And he always called me Lombardi. It was always a lot of Lom and then the big B. And so, you know, he said, tomorrow's going to be a great day for race relations in this country. Because Jim really felt like he was going to get convicted of it. It didn't happen. And I think most Americans did. Obviously, the glove didn't fit. But I think, to me, that's going to be what his legacy is, because the evidence is overwhelming. Obviously, I wasn't on the jury. I listened. But I think what's more tragic, Mike, is the fact that, you know, in the civil court, he did lose. And we, the Hall of Fame, has allowed people that have below the standard of excellence in the NFL to remain in the Hall of Fame. To keep George Preston Marshall, a racist, somebody who didn't sign an African American player until 1963 with Billy, the running back. Oh, I lost my train of thought on him. But to me, that's an injustice to the league. Like, somebody should complain about it. And I wrote at depth about it in Bobby Mitchell. I wrote at depth about it in Football Done Right, because I think that needs to change. OJ being in there should change. Because I think it gives a black eye to the league.
I think it's an interesting study in race, in that he was one of the first athletes that really was popular across all races. Obviously, with the Hurts and the commercials, and then he got into acting and was very beloved. But then when the trial started and the murders and all that, it split so down racial lines. My father was already retired at that point in his life. He had just retired. He was, like, you know, working on an armored car a couple of days a week to keep himself. He watched every second of that trial. Yeah. I said to him, you're going to lose your mind. I mean, but it was such a soap opera. And then he would watch Larry King at night, because Jerry Spence would come on and discuss what happened that day in the trial. And it's interesting, your story about Jim Brown, who obviously did so much for race relations in America, thinking that that would have been a healing guilty verdict when it was a very divisive acquittal.
Well, and Michael, too, like, you have people that are like my age and younger that this is the only version of OJ we know. Mm-hmm. I was born in 92. Yep. The trials were in 95, 96. So I don't know the American hero, the Buffalo Bills, great, the rush for 2,000 yards and won a Heisman Trophy. Like, I only know the way that OJ has been talked about since that trial.
No question. And look, you know, that trial, what Mike just said there, you know, it was a different time. You know, we didn't have 55 channels. We watched that. Everybody did. Everybody watched the trial. Everybody watched Larry King. Everybody got analysis. And the evidence was what we all heard. And unfortunately, because sometimes evidence doesn't always come out the right way or perceived or allowed, he was able to get off, but not in the civil court. And so, to me, you know, what has happened will stay with him forever.
Yep. OJ Simpson dead at 76. His family announced via cancer on social media.